And welcome back to the Sports Ticket. Wade Gershon with you on this Thursday. And certainly it's been a huge story. We've talked about it a ton here on the show the last few weeks, is conference realignment. And there's a gentleman that we know that is right in the heart of the conference realignment. And that is the play-by-play voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, Mark Johnson. As Colorado, we welcome them with open arms back to the Big 12. Mark, has your head stopped spinning from everything that's been happening the last few weeks? How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Good to be on with you. And, I tell you, yeah, the whole conference thing is, you want to talk about just utter chaos in college athletics right now. And if you want to throw in between the conference realignment, the NIL and transfer portal, it is just a bizarre world we're living in. But it's good to be back for the Buffaloes in the Big 12. Although I said in an interview the other day, I said it's like we're coming home, but not really, because the conference is very different now than it was, you know, when the Buffaloes left 12 years ago. But still, it's a good move for the Buffaloes, and what's left of the Pac-12 will, you know, visit this year, and there's not much left now. It's a Pac-4, but it's an amazing turn of events we've seen here the last few weeks.
The move by Colorado to the Big 12 really wasn't a big secret if you'd been paying attention. And I have a few friends that are like, wow, Colorado to the Big 12. I'm like, where you been? We've been talking about this for months, that Colorado would be interested in going to the Big 12. What finally pushed Colorado across that finish line and saying, you know what, we cannot remain a member of the Pac-12?
Well, I think it's basically the mess that the Pac-12 had become. You know, you think of the 12 years the Buffaloes were in that league, and there were many great promises. And I don't second-guess Mike Bone 12 years ago from making the move to the Pac-12. At that time, there was some logical sense. The Big 12 was having its issues. When you look at Colorado's alumni footprint, it is primarily in the West Coast. And, when you know, the first – I always remember back to the first football game we did in the Pac-12 as a member of the league. I think it was USC. It might have been UCLA. But anyway, it was in Los Angeles. And there were like 10 or 12,000 bus fans at that game. And so, you know, the alumni footprint for the Colorado is not in the Midwest where the Big 12 is. It's really in the West Coast. So it made perfect sense. But all the promises that were made back in 2010, very few ever actually developed. And the Pac-12 network turned out to be, you know, an utter disaster. The finances, the orchestration of the league, Larry Scott's leadership or lack thereof. And so there were a lot of reasons. And then most recently, obviously, is the up-in-the-air aspect of the media rights deal that never seemed to really develop or evolve under George Kliakoff. And there were all sorts of promises. There were rumors out there that this was going to happen, that was going to happen. Never made any sense to me. So I think, like a lot of schools out there, the University of Colorado sat back and looked and said, listen, this doesn't look good. Well, we're heading towards a cliff here. And is there a spot out there that might be a nice landing spot where we fit, where the finances make sense? And it just so happened the Big 12 was it, with all the history the Buffs have gotten, the Big 7, Big 8, and Big 12. So it made a lot of sense.
Mark Johnson, voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, a member of the Pac-12, but soon to be a member of the Big 12, is with us today on the Sports Ticket. How big of an impact, and when you were here in studio a few months ago, we talked about Deion Sanders and the impact with ticket sales, hotels, and everything else, the excitement around the football program. But do you think this would still have been the end result if Colorado, let's say, kept their coach from last year when they went 1-11? What kind of impact did Deion have on this whole thing, if any?
Well, it's hard to quantify that, but I'll say this: it didn't hurt, right? Mm-hmm. It certainly was not a net negative in terms of what Coach Prime brings to the table with the amount of attention and what we're seeing around the country in terms of Colorado being a topic of conversation. It certainly didn't hurt, and I think that certainly played in Colorado's favor. Now, it's tough to say that if Coach Prime had not been there and they had hired John Smith as the head coach after Carl Durrell and things were evolving with a new coach in place, could this still have happened? I think it probably could. You know, one thing we found out during a lot of this transition, there's been a lot of information released about television numbers and brand impact and all those sorts of things. And, yes, the Buffaloes have not had a good 15-year stretch here in football. I mean, it's been an awful stretch, with the exception of 2016 when they won the Pac-12 South and went to the Alamo Bowl. But outside of that, there hasn't been a lot of good going on. But the one thing we have seen with this information that's come out is that the University of Colorado is still a brand and an impactful brand and draws television numbers. And, that's a credit to what, Bill McCartney had done, back in the late 80s through the 90s up through Gary Barnett for that about 15-year stretch where they were so successful played for a national championship twice, nearly played a third time in 2001. And so there's a brand value in Colorado, plus the fact you bring with, you know, a top, 18 or 19 television market in Denver, Boulder. And so there's a lot of reasons why Colorado is a brand that people desired and thought had value. But, you know, the Deion Sanders impact of this thing is still very much a net positive.
You're talking about various numbers that are thrown out there. One of the things that was crazy about this whole process is, who do you trust? Who do you believe when it comes to media reports? Certain people said there's no way that the Big 12 is going to get anybody from the Pac-12. There was one guy that seemed to be wrong every single thing he reported. There were so many contradicting reports. So let me ask you this. On that Friday morning, all of a sudden there was narratives out there that the Pac-12 might be able to salvage this thing. And granted, Colorado was already out the door. That Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, they're granted rights. Oregon, Washington now suddenly wasn't so hot to trot about the Big Ten. Do you believe there was any legitimate chance the Pac-12 was staying intact?
I did not believe that at all, and I thought the writing was already on the wall. Yeah. Now, with that being said, you know, I always tell people, be careful about who you're paying attention to in this modern-day, you know, fly-by-night journalism that we see on social media. You got to be very careful. So, you know what, I was tracking guys like Dennis Dodd, Pete Thamel, guys who were established long-time, you know, journalists who have sources and have credibility and have a history. Those are the guys I was tracking. There's a lot of people out there. Listen, we've all seen, if you're on Twitter, you were seeing the same guys that I was, that, you know, one day had X happening, and the next day was Y, and then the third day was Z, and I don't know who these guys are. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. I was doing a radio show here in Denver yesterday. I got asked to come in and co-host and fill in with another veteran broadcaster and journalist here in town, and we were talking about kind of where media has gone, and it's really an interesting thing, and we see it here right now with the football camps going on. There's a lot of people showing up, and I look around half the time and thinking, who are these men and women who are here? I've never seen them. I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got websites, and they've got podcasts and those kind of things. And so, you know, you build credibility over time, and you build credibility by being honest and hardworking. And those men and women who are veteran journalists who have built that, they're the ones I tend to follow. The others are just rumor mill people, and it's circular reporting, you know, where, you know, Wade says something, and then Mark says something, and then Steve picks it up and says, hey, this is happening.
Right.
Well, just because Wade and Mark said it doesn't mean it's legitimate.
Yes.
But you see a lot of circular reporting out there right now. So that's why when that report was coming out, I thought, you know, I highly doubt this is the case. I went to the trusted sources out there, and they turned out to be right.
Yep, absolutely. The voice of the Colorado Buffalo is Mark Johnson, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Colorado headed to the Big 12. The Pac-12 has fallen apart. I've been preaching this a lot. I think you and I have talked about it before, and there's so many different ways we can look at this. To me, the number one reason the Pac-12 fell apart was because leadership wasn't very good. And the number one reason why the Big 12 is standing as solid as it is now, although that could change in a few years certainly, is one man, and that's Brett Yormark. I think Brett Yormark changed everything. Myself, I almost have a man crush on this guy because he's a businessman. He came in. He knew exactly what he wanted to do. He didn't do tons of stuff in secrecy like the SEC poaching Oklahoma and Texas or the Big Ten grabbing USC or UCLA. He was honest. He came flat out and said, we're open for business. He thinks outside the box. He's proactive. He's aggressive without being reckless, in my opinion. And I think great leaders are always proactive. I think the ones that aren't good leaders are the ones that are reactive. And you look at the situation, one of the first things he did was, we got to renegotiate our TV deal, and he got it done, and he beat the Pac-12 to the bunch. Wasn't that kind of the first domino that started to fall, or maybe not the first, but one of the biggest that really could have easily been the opposite way? If the Big 12 hired somebody like a Bob Bowlesby or Dan Beebe, and the Pac-12 had a really good leader, or say they hired Brett Yormark, we could easily be talking about the Big 12 is falling apart and the Pac-12 is more solidified, couldn't we?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, and I don't know Yormark. I've never met him, obviously, never been involved in the conference since he's come in. I'm looking forward to it. But from afar, I've been very impressed with kind of the way he views things. And he's got, you know, he's kind of visionary in some respects. I mean, what he's done, and maybe you've talked about it, I'm sure your fans have heard about it, but, you know, he's got the, you know, a lot of times NFL teams will come to campuses for Pro Day. He's creating a Big 12 Pro Day down in Jerry's World down there. I had a basketball coach tell me that one thing he's doing with the basketball coaches, he's having each one of the basketball coaches in the Big 12, and I think I've got this right, they're going to go out and do each one individually, do a clinic at Rucker Park in Harlem, which is kind of the epicenter of street ball, you know, and it has been for decades upon decades. And so he's got this marketing concept and this vision of what he wants the conference to be and how to make an impact, and that's great leadership. It's what you just talked about right there. And so there's no doubt. Everything we've seen from the Pac-12 in the last, you know, 10, 12 years has been just the opposite of that. And nothing's ever really been accomplished. And so seeing what he has done with the Big 12 now, I think it's exciting. I think it's exciting from the Colorado standpoint, being able to come back into the conference, and we're going to get a chance to be part of that. And my guess is with a guy like that, he's never running short of ideas. He's always probably got something else he's cooking up in his head, and so it's probably a lot more of those types of things coming up. And so that's what makes, I think, this move important. And, you know, here's the other thing about what's going on in college athletics. This isn't over right now. This is just the next wave. And there's an old line that said, if you believe you've got peace and it's quiet, that's only because everyone's reloading. And I think that's about what is happening right here. Now, is it going to be immediate? No. It's going to take another, you know, think about what's transpired here from conference realignment. You go back to the 2002, 3, 4, right in that area when the ACC thing with the Big East went down. Then we had the Pac-12 deal, right? And you know, with taking Colorado and Nebraska moving to the Big Ten, and now we've got things going the other direction. So it's we're in a cycle right now, and this is not over. It's just the next step. There'll be some peace here for a little while, and we're going to get back into this whole thing. And I think we've talked about this on your show. What it eventually happens is, you know, some sort of breaking away in the top 70, 75 programs doing their thing, and the players unionize, and there's revenue sharing, and that's probably where this is all going.
Chip Kelly had something he said recently, and there's a few other people who have kind of said this the same way, or in a different way, but kind of the same point, and that is, why don't we just make this a football thing? You know, let's just go, because Eli Drinkwitz of Missouri, I thought, made some very interesting points, said at what cost? You know, softball players, baseball players, I mean, the Big Ten, you look at where all these schools are. You've got Rutgers in New Jersey, you got Eugene, Oregon, and you've got the Ducks now in Washington. The Big 12 isn't maybe quite as crazy travel-wise, although Central Florida, that's an outlier there. West Virginia has to travel the most currently in the Big 12, and you add in Colorado, Arizona State, Utah, of course, BYU now new to the conference, and so we certainly get further away, and it takes longer to get to places. But what about that thought process, that, and because you kind of alluded to it there a moment ago, that this is, there's still a lot of moving parts to this whole thing. Where do you think this all goes, and do you think there's a possibility that we pretty much are going to have a, as some people think, it's almost like another NFL. We're going to have another, in essence, pro league that's going to be disguised as college sports, and it's football, but keeping the other sports to where they could stay regionally. And then football just kind of is the one that does what it needs to do because it's the one that brings in the most cheddar.
Well, I think that there's two issues you're talking about there. And I don't think one can exist with the other one. And here's what I mean by that. There's been talk about having football-only leagues to allow the other sports, as you just kind of laid out, that their travel isn't nearly as strenuous. And I think that's not a bad idea in one respect. However, the other respect then becomes, if there is this divorce, if you will, with football from everything else, I may be a doomsayer in this, but I've been preaching this for a long time. If that happens, if they just break away and say, you know what, we're not sharing the revenue anymore. We're going to go take our ball and do our own thing. Everyone wants to watch the big boys play football anyway. And when and if that happens, then I think college athletics dies as we know it. And I've said many times, if that happens, the greatest casualty will be women's athletics.
Yes.
Okay. And the reason I say that is this: if they go and break away, and everything I just laid out a little while ago happens, if it's a separation, and they ultimately have the revenue sharing with the union and all that sorts of stuff, this thing then becomes a business entity. And under that model, then, the odds are that there will be no public funds being used for this ed because it's a business by that point in time. If that happens, guess what? They don't have to abide by Title IX.
Yeah.
And if and when that happens, I've been saying this for a long time, I think women's athletics gets decimated in that. You could see that type of organization having big-time college football, and maybe men's and women's basketball, maybe a volleyball team, and then that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Then the next trickle effect of that is going to be that the lower levels, bottom of 1A, down to 1AA, into Division II, and on and on down, where all that money flows from the NCAA tournament contract with CBS, which is a $1 billion deal, then those schools are losing the mass amount of their funding, and ultimately they just go, you know what, we can't do this, we'll just drop sports altogether. And then you're going to see all sorts of, you know, kids like me, for example. I was first one of my family to go to college, and I went because I was on a basketball scholarship. Well, all of a sudden, those opportunities are going to be gone. And so this could really be devastating from a college athletic standpoint, from an opportunity standpoint, and that's what I don't want to see. And I've been kind of a, you know, lone voice in the wilderness preaching that for about 20 years, and everyone tells me I'm totally nuts. And every time we take another step towards it, I go, guys, the cliff's coming up here, but nobody seems to agree with me. Maybe now that we've kind of got pushed it this far, maybe people start realizing this. But I just think that it could be a really bad thing for college athletics. And then, and then lastly, here, I don't mean to be long-winded here, Wade, but the other thing would be, if, as you've laid out, if it's a NFL-type league, I've always wondered, why do we want an NFL-type league?
Mm-hmm.
We've already got the NFL.
Right.
We know what that is. We understand it's the greatest athletes on the face of the earth playing the game of football at the highest level. College athletics has been unique because of its association with schools, the at least appearance of amateurism, all the things that we love about that tradition. If you break this off and it becomes a separate entity and it's just an NFL light, you know, I don't know if that was the case, wouldn't minor league baseball be outstanding? Wouldn't we just love that, or minor league hockey, or yeah, you know, whatever it might be, because, or the USFL when they did that, or the XFL would be huge because, well, we love football. Well, I'm not sure that's the case. And then I think when we take away that uniqueness of college sports, then we start losing fans in that regard. And I don't know how many you gain on the other end.
And that leads me to my next point. It is interesting that in order to have college athletics, you need to have actual student athletes playing sports. That's obvious. And you need the fanatics. You need the crazy people, as I call them. And that's a good thing, that are all about their school. And of course, we talk about the rivalries. And yet, ironically, and it's not like it should be a big surprise, it really happens in the real world too, you know. It seems like the wealthier get wealthier, and the, you know, corporations get bigger, and the little guy gets, you know, squeezed out. You know, if there's a strike in professional sports or a lockout, the people that are really affected is not the players are affected, but the owner's big deal. It's the people that work in concessions or the ushers at the ballpark that count on that money, that now they don't have it because there aren't any games. But when you think about it, you got to have student athletes to have college athletics. You've got to have fans that at least watch TV, obviously. And yet, to me, those are the two biggest groups of people that are getting the shaft in this whole thing, because the student athletes, especially outside of football, are like, wait a minute. I went to this school because I'm in this region and my family can get to games and get off work and make it. Now I'm going to have to be across the country. And how is that going to be for my mental health? How am I going to keep up on my studies? And so forth and so on. And then there's the fans sitting there going, now you've taken away rivalries. I don't know if there's going to be, you know, I don't know if we're going to have Oregon State or Oklahoma State and all these type of things. Those two biggest groups are paramount to having all this stay together, but yet those are the two groups that get the biggest shaft.
Oh, there's no doubt. And you know, one of the great lies that's ever been told in college athletics is that we're concerned about the student athlete.
That's a crock.
And you know, I used to laugh at this all the time when there was conversations for the last 20 years about having a college football playoff. And every time they tell us, you can't do that. Do you know how much more we'd be taking the student-athletes out of the classroom? And I always thought to myself, am I the only one that sees that as being the most ridiculous argument ever? Because when the college football playoffs are going to happen is primarily during the Christmas break.
Yep.
So they're not missing class. And when I was at Syracuse University in 2003 and called the national championship, and I won't mention that we played that year, of course,
because
it makes everybody angry back in Kansas. But I think I remember thinking at the end of that run that as I traveled with the Orange, I think we were out of town for like something like 30 out of 37 days or something during the tournament. And that was during the semester, by the way.
Yeah.
Nobody ever seemed to be bothered by the fact that the teams who went to the Final Four are missing a lot of class room time during the men's basketball tournament or women's basketball tournament, but they're very concerned about the, you know, missing time during the Christmas break for the college football playoffs. So it's always been a facade that they put out there about being concerned about the student athlete. And what we've seen here, and I thought the coach at Missouri made a very good point. I mean, are we really serving the student athletes with the fact that, you know, the Trojans, USC Trojan soccer team is going to have to fly 6 hours to go and play in Piscataway, New Jersey. No. And by the way, when they do this for football, those guys can travel charter.
Yes.
That soccer team, they're going to travel commercial, by the way, make it even worse. And so, yeah, we don't think about that, and that's why we're speaking out of both sides of our mouth right now. And let's be honest about it. And one of the presidents or athletic directors during this whole process, I don't recall who it was, made the comment, you need to understand television is running this.
Yeah.
Television is making these decisions. Television is the one that's dictating. You know, we've said many times, the shoe companies are have way too much impact upon what's going on in college basketball. Well, television's got way too much impact and say on what happens in college athletics overall, and it's hurting the game.
Agreed. And let me go another step here. This is something I can foresee, and I've seen some people talk about it, and we're already seeing it. Florida State already is complaining about, well, we get so much in distribution, but we bring more than we get to the table. And we see it Major League Baseball, like, well, wait a minute, you know, we're the Yankees. Why do we have to pay for the Royals and pay a luxury tax for the Royals and A's to then don't go spend money? We're more valuable than other members of this conference is the point. And if you get these big conferences, which you're going to have 18 now in the Big Ten, eventually you might have 20, you might have 20 in the SEC at some point. Right now you have 16. Where do we – it's all about the money, right? We get down the line. I don't know if it's 2 years from now, 5 years from now, whenever it is. Couldn't we easily be looking at a situation where if Florida State's already trying to flex their muscle out of the ACC where, you know what, all of a sudden Alabama and Georgia aren't happy in the SEC. Or all of a sudden, Ohio State and Michigan are saying, why in the heck is Rutgers in this conference? Why are we giving them this big piece of the pie? We want more of the pie. We know we're worth more. You know what I'm saying? Like, are we getting to the point where, or if there was a, you know, if there was an independent out there, hello, Notre Dame, or if there was some other school that was kind of an up-and-comer that maybe was stuck in a merged conference between the Mountain West and the Pac-4 or whatever you want to call it, like, hey, that would be better than Vanderbilt. That'd be better than Rutgers. That'd be better than Iowa State or whatever the case may be. Do you think it's a possibility that we could be getting to that point down the line where it's like, you know what, we're sharing everything evenly, but now we're even greedier and we know we're worth more. We need more, and we're going to flex our muscle and make sure that happens.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And you know, the one thing I've always said about sports that everyone needs to remember is sports has to be socialistic. And what I mean by that is, you know, you bring up Major League Baseball, and certainly, you know, the New York Yankees, the St. Louis Cardinals, the L.A. Dodgers, those would be what people would think, you know, from a value standpoint, as your premier franchises. Well, here's the thing, though. The Yankees need the Kansas City Royals to play.
Right.
The Yankees in and of themselves have value within the context of the league and the confines of the league. The New York Yankees all by themselves, if there's not a Major League Baseball team, don't have any great value, right? And there has to be this socialistic kind of mindset that we're going to share so that we can have a level playing field to play. You can't just have, you know, it would be in essence, if you take Mike Tyson and put him in the ring with a 12-year-old boy, right? That doesn't make any sense. You can't have one side of the competition having all the strength and size and athleticism and on and on and on, and the other side not being able to compete with that. That the hammer and the nail don't have a rivalry. You have to have teams that are on somewhat level playing field, can compete off the field as they do on the field, and have the same opportunities. And so this concept that we want more, you know, that FSU right now, Florida State is the prime example. We're better than all of you. We need more than you get. Well, you know, what that mindset and that philosophy is going to do ultimately is kill this whole thing. You have to have some semblance of we're a brotherhood and we're working on this and collectively we're going to make money, and then individually within our own markets we can make more money if we can than maybe you can. You know, we got better donors than you did. We got better business sponsors than you do. That's the way you set yourself apart. But this concept that, you know, okay, I'm better looking than you are, so I need to get more than everybody else in the league. That's a dangerous, dangerous precedent. And number one, it's not virtuous. Number two, it is nothing but take care of me, take care of number one, and greed right now is ruling the day. That's highly concerning.
So let me ask you this. Conference realignment winners. When I say who are the conference realignment winners, what pops in your head right away?
Well, just because I'm sitting in the middle of it, anybody that left the Pac-12 to jump to a more secure situation,
right?
That would be number one. From a league standpoint, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting with me with Oregon and Washington jumping to the Big Ten, but have to take lesser shares for whatever it is, 6, 7, 8 years. You know, that's you know, by the time they get to full share, there might be more movement going on, and so that was interesting to me. So right now, I think. You know who I think is a winner in this whole thing? I think Central Florida is a winner in this.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I think BYU is a winner in this because of where they've been, and they're ending up on very solid footing. Now, anybody else that you think about, you can maybe throw Cincinnati in there as well, coming from a non-Power 5 conference. Houston maybe. You know, so I think those schools that have made that jump up, that they you can probably look at as having a pretty good day, if you will, in regards to how all this has all unfolded. Everyone else that just shifted from one Power 5 to another, you may or may not be making a few more bucks, maybe on solid footing, but I think those schools that made the jump up are probably the big winners in all of this.
Biggest conference realignment losers, obviously the Pac-12, obviously the ones that are left behind, but I'm going to squeeze this a little bit tighter for you. Out of the four remaining Pac-12 schools, who's impacted or hurt the worst of the four that are remaining? Who's in the worst shape of the four?
You know, it might be Cal. And I say that because of reputation and market situation, being an enormous market like the San Francisco Bay Area. That program has been in such a mess financially. The internals of the Cal Athletic Department have been horrible in recent years. And I just don't know how attractive they really are for somebody to take on. Stanford is a brand name. They could go independent if they wanted to. The interesting thing with Stanford is, as great as that athletic department has been, and every year they win the Learfield Cup, you know, for being the best athletic department in America. And every time you go to a football or basketball game, nobody shows up. It's a bizarre contradiction in terms with them. They get zero support for football and basketball, but still have that unbelievable athletic department. I think Stanford's in a very good position. I think for Oregon State and Washington State, here Oregon State's playing some phenomenal football right now, a top 15 team, and they're getting left out in the cold. I think they probably end up, you know, maybe in the Mountain West or something along those lines. Cal's an interesting one. Cal could be a big loser in this whole thing, and I'm kind of fascinated to watch and see how that whole thing unfolds.
Mark Johnson, voice of Colorado Buffalo, is our guest today on the Sports Ticket. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Well, first of all, I want to tell you this, that when you were with us in studio, along with John Bowden, we won second place. It was a category for our Kansas Association of Broadcasting Awards. Sports feature is what it was called. And we got second place with the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, Mark Johnson, in the studio.
Wow.
Yeah, and so here's one of the off-the-wall questions is how much of that...
Well, first off, by the way, I don't mean to interrupt, but first off, the only reason he didn't get first place is because it was a Kansas Jayhawk fan, and he knew that I was a Syracuse announcer.
Yes.
That's the only reason he didn't get first place for that interview, dang it. And that's not right. And nope. Secondly, hey, you know why Bowden moved to Beloit, don't you? Because he knew the Buffs were coming back to the Big 12. He wanted to be closer to Manhattan and Lawrence and all that kind of stuff so we could come bug me in the broadcast booth. That was the reason.
Yeah, I do believe that. I know there's a lot of mistruths out there through all this whole process, but that might be one of the biggest truths right there. I agree with you on that. Which is funny because that leads me to my little bit of the mini off-the-wall question. So it's a good thing we didn't get first place because first place you get some kind of trophy, and then Bowden would want like a piece of it. So now with second place, it's like a picture with a certificate or whatever. But, yep. But you know, what? How much credit should John Bowden get for that interview getting second place in the KAB Awards? Like, what's the percentage of his take? You know, like if we would have won a bet here, what's his percentage of money he would get out of this deal?
You know, actually, if you remember, it was his fault that I was late for
yes,
the interview.
Yes, absolutely.
So he actually gets nothing. He owes you, I think, breakfast one day.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to make sure that he hears that if he's not listening right now.
He's listening right now. Bowden, get that wallet out and take Wayne out for breakfast. Man, dang it, you made me late for that interview.
Oh, my gosh, I love it. Man, Mark Johnson just keeps scoring points with me every single day. And he didn't even bring up the team that Syracuse beat in 03. So you're doing a great job so far, Mark. All right, last one for you. How long would it take for you to ride your horse now that Colorado's back in the Big 12? How long would it take Mark Johnson to ride his horse to Manhattan or Lawrence, Kansas for a Big 12 matchup?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I just did a 100-mile ride here that I do every year, that wilderness run I did. And we do 20 miles a day, and it takes us 5 days to do that. Ooh. I don't know. How many miles? It's got to be about 350, 400 miles, I would think, to Manhattan from my place. So I guess that'd be five times four. And that's got to be 20 days or so. It'd take me a while, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you think about those wagon trains that went across the country. I mean, that was a long trip, or driving cattle, you know. That took a long time. So that's not going to be a short trip. I might have to leave on Saturday after a game to get to Manhattan by the next game. I'm not even sure I could do that, to be honest with you.
Let's see here. So I've got here Evergreen, Colorado. Is that close enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
According to Google Maps, it's 522 miles to Manhattan, Kansas. 522 miles.
Oh, geez, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if I pushed it and did 30 miles a day, you're still talking a heck of a ride. That would take me quite a while.
Lawrence would be 594 miles. So you might have to have more than one horse lined up for this thing.
Be kind of a Pony Express kind of deal. have to be out in Lyman or something with a horse out there, and in eastern Colorado, and another one when I got into Kansas. And that would be a heck of a deal. And I'd be a mess. I wouldn't be able to do the broadcast by the time I got there.
Yeah, and your butt would be really sore. And the other thing, too, is if you were relying on John to make sure you had reinforcements, you'd be really late. You'd miss the game is what would happen.
He'd have the new horses in the wrong location. We'd miss each other. That would just be a disaster. So I'm just gonna take the train.
I thought the game was in Boulder. No, it's in Lawrence, John. Oh, okay. Well, we'll fix that. That's not a problem. Oh, man. Mark, it's always a pleasure having you on. And I tell you, it's just been absolutely insane. Who knows where all this is going to go? But I know this for a while, hopefully, is that you will be coming back our way way more often, with Colorado being a member of the Big 12. And I know that we're all excited about that. And we thank you so much for your time. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you again later on this season.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I look forward to chatting with you. And the more I get back, the more I can hunt pheasants. So that's good for me. And we look forward to it. Don't hesitate to drop me a line. We'll get on the air again sometime.
Sounds fantastic. Mark Johnson, he is the play-by-play announcer at Colorado Buffalo, is our guest today on the Sports Ticket.